Thank you very much.
It's already turned up on this. I can't adjust. Yeah, this will work.
We've had meetings in here before.
Need to participate and Siri to participate. This is very important. This legislation, and I appreciate that on so many levels, both as the president and CEO of Siri, but also as a citizen of the state of Alaska. So again, thank you.
Thank you very much.
I am Margie Brown, and I am the president and CEO of Siri.
Need to participate and Siri to participate. This is a very important piece of legislation, and I know you're undertaking.
I'm not going to take myself too awfully much, but clearly that's a long tenure. I am from Alaska, raised in Tukotna. Tukotna, of course, you hear about every other year when the Iditarod goes through, and it went through this year. It's supposedly the best and friendliest village on the trail, but that is where I was raised. I have also been, in my 35 years of history with Siri, the head of Siri's oil and gas division and its resources division, and so it's with the experience of the last 6 years as the president of Siri, but also my years of running Siri's oil and gas division that I come to you today to offer my views on the legislation that you have before you. First, a little bit about Siri. Siri, of course, is an Alaska Native regional corporation headquartered here in Anchorage. Its regional boundaries represent the traditional territorial boundaries of the Dena'ina, Athabaskan Indians here. We have a wide variety of businesses. We have both more passive investments, but we also have operating investments in Alaska and outside of Alaska. And we have, of late, undertaken to develop energy projects here in South Central, realizing, of course, that we do have a serious energy need here in South Central Alaska. We are trying to do our part with the construction of the Fire Island Wind Farm, and a very exciting project called Underground Coal Gasification. We have also been in the oil and gas business for quite a while, perhaps longer than any other Alaska Native corporation in existence. And that is because, of course, we are here in a Cook Inlet Basin, which is an oil and gas basin. In our lands that we acquired through the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act included legacy oil fields. And so we stepped into the shoes of the federal government as a royalty owner and the state of Alaska as a royalty owner on legacy fields, such as the Swanson River oil field and the Kenai gas field. Being a royalty owner, of course, led us to our interest in also being a working interest owner. And so we have, along the 35 years of history, participated in several working interest exploration plays, most of them in Cook Inlet, because, of course, that's the area we're most familiar with. But we have also participated in a wildcat well on the North Slope. Didn't turn out so well for us, and we haven't been back to do one of those recently. But we are very concerned about exploration, both in Cook Inlet and on the North Slope. We care about that. Now, just before we move on to why we care so much, I'd just like to say we are also trying to do our part here in Cook Inlet to increase our gas reserves. We do have a well on the way on our property in the Kenai Peninsula right now. We're not able to share the results yet because we don't know the results yet, but we've got our fingers crossed that at some point we will be able to make an announcement. So it's exciting to have a well being drilled on our property. Sometimes we go a year or so without having that happen, and we're happy to be doing our part. So why do we care so much about the North Slope and its exploration and development efforts? Well, obviously, we do feel that that has a very significant impact on the entire economy and the state of Alaska's economy, and of course, we are participants in this economy and intend to stay that way for a very, very long time. But more particularly, we also have a significant ownership interest in two companies that do a lot of work on the North Slope. They only have two in our stable of companies in this series, ownership interest for many, many years, Peace Oil Field Services Company and Alaska Interstate Construction Company. Those companies are known for their expertise and the work they do on the slope, moving rigs, building ice roads, moving heavy modular pieces of plant here and there, and other work that is necessary to actually develop and produce oil and gas from the North Slope. We have been concerned, and particularly very concerned this last year as we began to look at our budgets and develop a budget to present to the Cleary Board of Directors for their approval, because we saw a very, very dramatic downturn in the estimated income that will be derived from these two companies. They, of course, are reflecting the decline in work on the slope, which looks to be relatively dramatic, and we have already begun to see the effects of that, not only in the numbers that they project that they can produce for us, but also in the reduction of their labor force. And as of last year, I believe both of the companies began reducing their labor force to put them in line, of course, with their anticipated work projects. So it was alarming. Not that there has been a decrease necessarily, because we know from being Alaskans and being here and living here for a long time that the oil patch is sometimes up and sometimes down. But it was alarming to me in the magnitude of the decline. So with that, I think that it sent out alarm bells in my own mind about what is going on that has causing this decline, and what is the effect as we look throughout the larger economy as a whole. And that coincides with some reports that we are seeing about the fact that Alaska is not necessarily friendly to business, that it is not a very welcoming place for private investment dollars. And I think that I have come to embrace this view, not so much that I'm so sympathetic to the large oil producers on the North Slope, because, you know, obviously they have the capacity to take care of themselves and they advance their interests very well. But I am seeing the difficulty in doing business in Alaska hit home at my very desk. As you know,
thank you, Representative Peck. That'll be Juno next week.
I know that's not my ring, so I feel confident.
I'd also like to recognize Revenue Commissioner Brian Kutcher has joined us here. So, sorry to interrupt there.
Recently, I was invited to attend a dinner with Governor Parnell, and it had various business leaders, including myself, in a variety of different businesses, telecommunications, of course, Alaska Native corporations, and the oil companies, and just the tourism, people in the tourism business. And I think the message overall, as we went around the table and talked about what it was that concerned us was, and what we wanted to tell the governor, was that there was this view, and that we were feeling it, we were all feeling it, that private enterprise and private investment in this state is being squeezed out. And I know for a fact, working very, very hard as we have been to produce and build the Fire Island Wind project, we have seen a lot of resistance to the ability to put investment dollars, private investment dollars, in this region, so much so that even myself, I am looking at business opportunities that happen outside the state of Alaska. So private capital will move. It will move to where there is the highest likelihood of a return, and there is return versus risk in balance. And I don't want to see the situation happen in Alaska where you have private investment dollars slipping away. So I think that this is the place to call ourselves up short and say, what is it in our climate that is causing this to happen? I think it's all about risk and return, and I think that we have to recognize, particularly on the North Slope, that that perhaps, now I happen to be married to a young geologist, maybe not so young right now, who babysat the discovery well at Prudhoe Bay. And he might not, and given the harsh conditions that he had to endure, being taken out to the well site in the front end of a front-end loader in the dead of winter, perhaps, maybe a tough decision and a tough work. But I think he would actually also agree that some of the easy oil has been found, and we are looking now at a situation where there's lots of oil on the North Slope, but it's challenged, and that it's going to be difficult to produce, and that there is going to be a lot of risk in doing that, and there needs to be appropriate return. And to have that, then we will have, I think, a robust economy. I have, as I said, married to a geologist, have been having discussions with him for several years now about the throughput and the decline in throughput on the North Slope. And it's something, of course, that people in the business have been watching and have been aware of for some time. As the throughput declined, that did coincide in the last several years with pretty significant rise in oil prices, which has, I believe, obscured the fact until just recently that we do have a throughput problem. So we have been benefited, obviously, in the state from these high oil prices, but it has been at the expense of having a real understanding about the vulnerability of the pipeline and its throughput. So to the extent that there is a need to undertake legislative reform like House Bill 110, I think really it hits the mark on dealing with issues that are very, very concerning to those that are in the industry and spilling over now to just the general public at large. I don't think the status quo is an option. I have been concerned about the debate about how much we are, quote unquote, giving away to the oil industry. I don't think that is the approach that we should be taking, because, of course, unless we have a competitive environment, unless we have a robust exploration and oil development, particularly on the North Slope, it's not about taking away from the oil companies, because we will not have it in the first place. So I think the dialogue needs to be switched, and I think opportunities like this to testify help the public encourage you to actually look at the problem in that light. Business leaders are concerned. This is not about just people involved with the oil business. This is about business leaders throughout the state. There are several grassroots efforts that are forming now to actually look at the competitive nature and where we could improve that in Alaska. And I think that is an indication of the broad concern that people are beginning to share across all of our business segments about the lack of competition and what's going on in the North Slope. So I do not know every nuance of House Bill 110. I'm not the expert. You folks will likely be that when you're finished with the deliberation. But I do think that it is on the right track. I do support the governor's efforts to reform the taxing structure. I note that from my oil and gas business in the past, that we do have a royalty stream that allows for benefits when production is high and oil as prices are high. And so I don't think that the dialogue needs to be in the taxing structure that you have to squeeze every cent or feel that you are not doing your job. I think what Alaskans are looking for is a balance that allows a longer-term, robust business climate to persist on the North Slope, and that will spread throughout the state into all areas of the state when that happens. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. Was Mr. You're here.
Thank you. My name is Ethan Shutt. I'm the Senior Vice President of Land and Energy Development at CIRI. And so in my scope of responsibilities fall two things that Ms. Brown just testified about. Number one is the leasing oil and gas production on CIRI land here in Cook Inlet. And so the exploration well she talked about is a function of the incentives we've put in place as a private landowner and resource owner and working closely with the industry to try to make sure that we take care of our energy needs here in South Central. And the second area of responsibility is just general energy development, several of the energy projects that we have underway here in South Central. The most prominent are the Fire Island Wind Farm and the underground coal gasification. And Margie was a little oblique about the reference on how challenging it is to do business here locally in Alaska and the climate. I think that we've encountered a significant amount of resistance with our Fire Island Wind project that is really largely related to the fact that we're a for-profit business. I can tell you from direct experience that in June of last year, I heard several times behind closed doors that there's no place in the Rail Belt for a for-profit energy company in the Rail Belt electrical market. And I think that, you know, some of this is that's very troubling, number one, that the statement that you can't have a profit motive because somehow that's bad. Obviously, that's just an unacceptable starting premise, and I think that that's largely been one of the significant obstacles to achieving a commercial project on Fire Island. And Margie also alluded to the fact that private investment dollars flow out of the state, and we are looking very closely at several wind farm investments outside of Alaska. It's very likely that we will close a significant wind farm investment in the Pacific Northwest. So those investment dollars do flow out of Alaska. So when you take your local businesses who are interested in trying to do the right thing here and you tell them that you're not welcome, those dollars do flow to other places. So as an Alaskan, that really troubles me. I know I came back, I visited Calgary, Alberta earlier this spring for a business trip, and I was on the ground there for about 24 hours, and I came back and I was very angry and upset. What I saw in Calgary, Alberta is what I would envision that we would like to see here in Alaska as Alaskans. Calgary is, you know, it's a Canadian province, it's a Western type of form of democratic government. They have strict environmental rules, same as we have here, and they're an energy province. And the vast difference is when you go there, that place is really bustling with activity. It's exciting. There's all sorts of energy development going on there. The big driver, of course, is the oil sands, and you can debate whether or not that's something we'd like to see here or not. But it's not just simply limited to the oil sands. They're doing significantly more in the oil and gas business in Alberta than the oil sands. They're doing traditional oil and gas leasing. They're doing some of the more innovative, cutting-edge, unconventional gas and unconventional oil. They've got CO2 tertiary recovery going on there where you inject CO2 into depleted fields and you get additional recovery from that. So they have a wide variety of investment activity going on, and they are being rewarded. And why I was so upset was when I was there, two things happened. Number one, the Nigerians had engineers looking at the Agrium plant in Nikiski. that was not a secret, and it was just sort of coincidental that the news picked up on the fact that there were engineers doing due diligence regarding the possible dismantling of one of our pieces of energy infrastructure in Cook Inlet. And the second was I was there when the ConocoPhillips announcement came out that they're closing the LNG export terminal at Nikiski. And, you know, that did come as a surprise, but the surprise was really only the timing and not the fact that the announcement was made. I think that we have done ourselves a disservice in this state when we take the power to tax as a government and we overreach and we chase investment dollars away. And when we make these hysterical pronouncements in the press about look at the profits that these companies are making and, you know, the implication being that a profit motive is a bad thing. I think we need to have exploration dollars invested in our state. Exploration is very costly and exploration is very risky. When you take rank oil and gas exploration, the chances of having success are less than 10%. So obviously when they have a field, discover a field and get it into production, they need to be rewarded for that investment. And I think that our attitude about, you know, how much are we giving away to the oil industry, I think we've gone a little too far. And so I think that the House Bill 110 is a good vehicle. We support the governor's effort on this at SERI. Thank you.
Questions? Mr. Dugan.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I think those of us at the table are under the impression that we're doing quite a bit to incentivize exploration. Are you saying that you don't think we're doing enough?
Representative Dugan, I think that my position is that there are a couple things going on. I think there are incentives for companies who don't have much production to come into the state and do real exploration through the tax credit program that exists for exploration and pure exploration. It gets more complicated when companies have real production and therefore are paying a significant tax, particularly at the higher dollar or higher values for the commodity. So I think it gets more complicated when they have production, and the exploration tax credits program incentivizes people who are new to the state, and I'm not sure that that's, that is in balance when you have both exploration and production. Second piece to that, I think, is that there's this difference between the power to tax and the royalty regime that you have. As a resource owner, you have a royalty interest, and that's very appropriate. That's what we have as a private resource owner. And you don't want to try to squeeze too much out on that tax structure because the power to tax is purely a governmental regime instead of a resource owner. And so this notion of, well, it's our oil, so therefore we should get our fair share. Well, that's your royalty regime. The tax regime is just about, you know, what is fair vis-a-vis the state of the government and that power to tax. So I think those are my points about whether or not the tax credit incentive program in and of itself is adequate.
Thank you. Again, we're under the impression, at least I am, that roughly half of the $900 million that we spent in the last fiscal year, or gave back, essentially, in the last fiscal year, that something more than half of that went to established oil companies, I guess the big three, I'm not exactly sure, and for exactly that point, it incentivizes exploration and development. But if there's information that says that we're not doing that right, I'd certainly appreciate seeing it, because the discussion so far, I think it's fair to say, has been about not exploration, but the development side of that, and that it is aimed primarily at the, you know, the major producers. So if I'm just hearing this wrong, I'd certainly appreciate it if you could, you know, help me out with that. Thank you.
Sure. I guess, you know, to go back to one of the points that Ms. Brown made on behalf of Siri. We're not here to carry the water for big oil. I think, you know, if you want to get real answers from them about what they think, they're the right people to talk to. Obviously, you have already spoken had testimony from the big three. I think that
we will on Wednesday in this committee.
They'll make their own points. One other observation, I think, as an outsider doesn't have a direct interest in this activity, is that the best place to find more oil is in an established oil field. And the reserves left in some of the big fields, including Prudhoe Bay, are pretty significant. And the tax incentive structure that we have here, I believe, largely relates to true exploration outside of established units. And so you may want to look at, are there additional tweaks to be made to incentivize additional production and production enhancement investment within established oil fields? Because the reserves on Prudhoe Bay that are not attainable with the primary and secondary types of recovery might be the state of Alaska's biggest oil asset on state land. So I would not discount or throw away the notion that incentivizing oil companies to invest more in the established fields, and particularly Prudhoe Bay, is not in the state's interest.
Thank you. That's a fair question. Ms. Brown, would you mind coming back up again? Thank you. That's a fair question.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You talked about Alaska's business-friendly environment and about repositioning assets. Can you speak to what, as a corporation, you look at for business-friendly that we might think about in consideration of reviewing oil taxes?
I could say this, that as we look to making our investments here in Cook Inlet, we have been challenged at permitting levels with just permitting delays. We have managed to get through all of those with some assistance. We have, as Ethan said, run into this notion that if particularly in producing power and power generation, that private enterprise does not belong there. And so I think that is probably the most alarming to us, that private enterprise somehow is looked at and the profit motive, as Ethan said, is not appropriate. And it seems to me that this state was really made by people who had a can-do attitude. And I worry that we have come to the place where people cannot get together and actually design a future for themselves and move towards that future, because there are so many folks who do not seem to have this can-do attitude. So I think as far as the taxation issue, it really is a kind of an attitude adjustment that we would encourage. That I know there has been discussion about if we lower our taxes, then what kind of work commitments can we get for that? I just think that is beyond the scope and is not the healthy dialogue when you're talking about the tax regime. I think that we would like to see, and again, the producers can talk for themselves, I'm sure, but I think I would like to see an establishment of what is considered a fair rate, not that every cent has to be wrestled away, but that it be fair, and that then you let the free enterprise system work, and that there is not a demand for for a particular work commitment or whatever. Those happen in your unit operating agreement. Those happen in your leases that you issue. Those are part of what a royalty owner and the owner of a resource requires in their agreements. That's where we require it in our agreements. But to do that, to step over that line and do that when you're talking about taxation, I think puts the dialogue in the wrong place. And I really think that what we need to have, first of all, is a real appreciation for where private enterprise fits in the state, and not just the big oil producers, but native corporations, smaller companies. We really do need a very, very healthy private enterprise in this state in order to sort of move forward. And so I would just say that we would need to have a taxing structure that's fair, and then you let the free enterprise work and encourage free enterprise to be here, and you do that by not overreaching when you're particularly in the taxing structure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Brown, you talked about a decline in employment in the two companies, or maybe it's more in one than the other. How will you reposition those workers, or do you lay them off? Do you try to find other places for them to work? And can you share with the committee how many people are affected by what you said was dramatic decline?
Well, since we do have competitors here in the room, I won't share with you all of that, but I would say that it is dramatic, and more dramatic than even I was prepared to see. I'm not sure exactly how many when you talk about bodies, but I do know that both AIC and Peak have been skinning down their workforce. They do a very good job of trying to find other work and other places where employers or employees can go, but that's just not always possible. And it is a very, very fine line that these companies have to walk, because, of course, everybody wants to preserve their workforce. Everybody wants to preserve people who are good workers and are well-trained. And yet the reality is that if you don't have the work, you just cannot. And so companies are faced now with the hard choice of whether they let folks go or whether they try to bear the burden of holding them just so they don't have to retrain when things pick up and they rehire. So it's hard. It's hard on folks to do that because they are, and the managers of our companies try to do a very good job of maintaining that balance of keeping a workforce that actually can go to work if they get the contracts with not running into the red.
And we have a very short question, so we have five groups. And doing my quick calculation, we're right. Everything runs at this, but we'll have 2.5 minutes left. So that's my best laid plan. Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chair, I'll make it really quick. When you were talking about not being friendly to private business, is that based on our state regulations, federal, or the other nonprofits in the state? What do you think is not supporting private business?
Well, clearly, there are a lot of issues with the federal government that others, Shell Oil and all, are dealing with. That we are not in that realm yet. We will be, I believe, when we're a little further along with our underground coal gasification, because, we will be dealing with EPA and other federal regulators. But we are early in that process. We're just now finishing our second drilling season, and so we are working largely under state permits, which that we have received through DNR, and have been pleased with how once we got underway, how we have been able to work with DNR. So I do expect that at some point we will have federal issues. I think that for us, it is more about rattling the status quo that is causing people the problem. I have myself come to the conclusion that I am just not going to use the fact that we are unique and our systems are unique and we're so different and we're not connected to anybody's transmission grid. And there's a million excuses about why Alaska is so special, and it's used as an excuse. I have decided myself not to do that anymore, that we have got to be able to change. We have got to be able to recognize that there are some systems, like, for instance, the utility systems that we have in this state, that are just not in serving the people the way that they should. And yet we have such a resistance to change because it's a change. And I recognize that changing systems is scary to people, particularly when we have a vulnerable system like apparently we do. But I don't think that we can use that anymore. I don't think that we can use our unique status and the way we do things is so different that we can't use that as an excuse. And what we're finding in the oil patch is we're not so unique because, you know what, people are going and they're going to North Dakota and they're going to Alberta and they're going overseas, and we're not that unique. We used to say that we had a stable government and people would be here because this is the United States and we have all of this working for us. Well, as it turns out, that's not the case. That we are seeing leakage out of the state every day. And so my personal commitment to myself is to just stop using our uniqueness and our status as an excuse and be able to embrace some change.
Thank you. It's a tough question to answer. So, as a police investigator seeing a body, which of the 17 stab wounds was the fatal one? So, thank you both. And I would like to recognize Representative Guttenberg and Wilson joined us, and we have also with us Representative Millett right next to the other. And Speaker Emeritus John Harris. Welcome. We miss you, John. And this is not deja vu. We have another representative here. Welcome, Representative Doyon. Please introduce yourself and your background and tell us about your company and then provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Great to be here this morning. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Aaron Schutt. I'm the Senior Vice President and Chief Operating Officer at Doyon Limited. Like my brother, I grew up in Tok, and I'm always an interior boy, despite the fact that I've lived here in Anchorage for 11 years now. Doyon, as you all know, is the INCSA Regional Corporation for Interior Alaska. We're headquartered in Fairbanks. We're largely an Alaska company. We have 18,158 shareholders. Of those, 13,697 live here in Alaska. About half of them live in Interior Alaska. Another quarter of our shareholders reside elsewhere in Alaska, with about half of those being here in Anchorage. Let me start by saying that Doyon supports HB 110. We would prefer to see certain of the implementation periods be amended in the bill to be effective this year, in particular the bracketing provision of the bill. But in like theory, we think it is time for change. We have we've had representatives of our company testify in Juneau to the same effect, and I'm going to repeat some of the same points here today. Let me start by introducing a couple of our businesses. You'll see why we care so much about oil and gas tax policy here in Alaska when you hear about our businesses. We have three primary, what we call pillars of our business. Those are major aspects of our business that produce revenue and jobs, and those are two things we care very much about as a company. We have two primary goals set by our board of directors. One is, of course, to be profitable as possible. The second, which is unique to many INCSA corporations, is we care about hiring our shareholders. So employment opportunities, particularly here in Alaska, are very important to us and our board. Three pillars: oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development. Two of our three pillars are very relevant to the discussion we're having here today. I'll start with our oil field businesses. We have four of them. They operate primarily on the North Slope. We have some operations outside of Alaska, but we're predominantly an Alaska company. We have Doyon Drilling, our oldest, most successful business. We operate drilling rigs for, on the North Slope, we have 6 large Arctic rigs and 1 small exploration rig, about 300 year-round employees. Doyon Universal Services is a food service, facility maintenance, security, emergency medical company. It has about 850 employees. Almost all of those are here in Alaska, mostly on the North Slope. Doyon Associated is a pipeline and oil field infrastructure construction company. It has seasonally about 150 employees year-round, much fewer. And Doyon Emerald is an engineering firm and technical consulting firm that has about 40 employees, largely supporting the oil and gas industry here in Alaska. So in the aggregate, we have about 1,440 employees from our oil field service companies. Of those, about 90% of those folks are Alaskans, both have jobs here in Alaska and are Alaskans. We are a company that emphasizes Alaska hire. We emphasize shareholder hire, and we have about 435 of Doyon's shareholders employed by the company. Also, and very relevant to the discussion today, we've heavily invested in Alaska's oil field. We have about 3/4 of our corporate assets invested in these companies. $300+ million of our corporate assets are invested mostly on Alaska's North Slope, most heavily, of course, in our drilling rigs. So we are very vested in the success of Alaska's oil and gas industry. Turning to our second pillar, we want to talk about today, natural resource development. We are Alaska's largest private landowner. We have 12.5 million acres of entitlement under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. People don't realize that roughly half of those acres were selected for resource development potential. And although we have no producing oil and gas wells in interior Alaska, a large portion of that half of our acreage was selected for oil and gas potential. We've had a couple projects that have gotten a lot of press and that we're very committed to in interior Alaska. One is our gas exploration project at Nenana. There we're a partner with the state of Alaska. We have a 500,000-acre license area that encompasses state of Alaska lands, mental health trust lands, and Doyon lands. Doyon Limited is a 50% working interest owner in that exploration project. We've spent a lot of money there. This is a multi-year commitment. We started in 2005 with a seismic exploration program in the winter of 2005. In the summer of 2009, we drilled one well. Didn't find the success we hoped for, but we're encouraged enough that we announced, I'm sure some of you probably saw last week, that we announced that we will run another seismic exploration program next winter in the Nenana Basin. So our commitment is strong there. We also have 2 million acres in the Yukon Flats. About 500,000 of those acres were selected for oil and gas potential. And last winter, in 2010, Doyon, 100% working interest owner in its own exploration program, which is fairly rare for ANCSA corporations, we conducted a seismic program near Stevens Village, and we will be back in the Yukon Flats as well. We have that commitment. We've made it to our shareholders and publicly expressed that support for ongoing efforts in the Yukon Flats. So as you can see, we clearly are aligned with the state of Alaska in terms of having success in our oil and gas industry, both as a service contractor and as a investor in exploration activity in Alaska. The bottom line is that we believe that it's time to adjust the oil and gas tax structure. We have 1,500 employees that rely on success in the oil field. We believe that there are still vast oil and gas opportunities here in Alaska that are underdeveloped at this point, and that includes outside of the traditional basins, but certainly as Siri testified here, we at Doyon also believe that the best production opportunities are in existing fields, and that's where in our service contracting part of our business. We've invested, we've put our money where our mouth is, for sure. We've also seen in the last few years, as again, as Siri testified this morning, a loss of activity. That's jobs and revenue. We've seen that in certain of our business segments as well. That impacts us on both halves of our goals, both with our goal of making money and in our goal of employing people, shareholders specifically. And we do believe that, the current oil and gas tax policy is a part of that problem. So to end my testimony, we do support HB 110. As I said at the beginning of my testimony, we would like to see certain portions of the bill implemented this year, but otherwise we fully support HB 110.
Representative Denmark.
Thank you, Aaron. I really appreciate you coming and talking to us today. I really appreciate you having the discussion about what's going on in Nigeria and Nana and you on that. As far as those programs go, because I mean, a lot of my discussion with many of us in the legislature see your success in Nigeria and Nana, especially, as a game changer for energy in the state. In the real world. Is there any part of the oil and gas structure or the tax structure or the administrative codes or permitting that is holding you up that you see needs to be changed? Just in broad general terms, but something you can put your finger on that we can do to incentivize or further motivate you to be aggressive about your exploration and development?
Thank you for the question. Let me first say that, as was addressed again earlier in the testimony, the exploration portion of the incentives that the state of Alaska provides are very motivating for exploration outside of the known fields. And at the time that I said that Dawn was a 50% working interest owner at Nenana, at the beginning of that project, we were a 20% working interest owner. And we are very committed to that project, but our partners outside of Alaska, who at one time made up well over 50% of the working interest, are different than us. They're not Alaska companies. They're from outside. And they look at the life cycle of a whole oil and gas development project. Some companies are truly exploration companies. Some have, like, especially the major oil producers, you know, they're in it from exploration through production. So you've got to look at each opportunity and look at the players that are coming to the table. One thing that I think has inhibited our exploration activity is our inability to attract those that are major producers that will be here for the long haul from exploration through production. And those are the folks with the huge balance sheets that can invest hundreds and billions of dollars here in Alaska. And we're not seeing the interest there on coming to the state that we would hope at Doyon to see, and I think that and that plays out statewide.
Other questions? Representative Bureau?
Thank you. I could be wrong about this issue, but in the Yukon Flats area, is not the tax structure much lower than the ACES tax structure?
I don't know the answer. To be frank on that, we're looking at our company strategy there, because of the ANCSA Corporation 7I structure, is to jumpstart exploration activity. We will not be a significant working interest owner in any development in the Yukon Flats because of the 7I structure of ANCSA.
Yeah.
The statement that you are having a hard time getting producers to come in on that project, and again, I could be wrong about that, but if the tax structure is much lower in that area, then it wouldn't be the tax structure that's deterring them, right? It would be something else?
I speculated, and I believe I hedged when I said I speculated, as all lawyers do. We have not been able to attract a major company to that basin. Why they will not commit to that basin has never been absolutely clear to us. There's, at the forefront of a rank exploration project, there's incredible risk. More than 90% of rank exploration ends in dry wells or less than successful wells, and that is the primary driver. Exploration credits certainly help, as I said, and that's driving our activity both at Teton Flats and Indiana, but certainly the life cycle of a business opportunity clearly includes analysis of tax tax policy and tax structure and predictability of a tax structure. Those are things we've heard from our partners both on the North Slope and as we discuss opportunities to enter into exploration agreements with us.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Certainly, we've heard lots of dialogue about big profits, and apparently everyone in the world can make large profit except oil, at least from some perspective. With that in mind, can you tell me a little bit or fine-tune the difference between an exploration company and a production company and how they might be different? Because when we've been having conversation, at least over the last week, we've heard, as Representative Dugan has said, that exploration seems to have worthy credits that are inspiring people to do what the tax structure was intended to do, and that's bring smaller explorers here to try to find those smaller pools of oil, or if we were so fortunate, another Prudhoe Bay. So could you speak to the committee about how explorers might be different and then that some are the same? Because I think that you hit on that just a minute ago.
It is a relatively complicated question, actually, and I'm not an oil and gas expert, but I'll give you what I know and my perspective. What we've seen here in Alaska are a lot of smaller companies come in, and they generally don't have the balance sheets to do a full production on, to go to full production on especially a larger or remote field. Those are billion-dollar investments, of course. Major producers like the ones that are here and others worldwide, they may enter only into exploration in a certain area, make that decision, but they certainly have the resources, both technical and financial, to make a commitment to fully participate in production rather than, as we say, sell down, you know, go into a into an exploration project with the intent of finding something and then selling part or all of your working interest to major producers. And we certainly have examples here in Alaska with Armstrong Oil and Gas and others who have explored, found promising targets, and then invited other investors to either buy them out or buy them down and fund that further effort. So there, but your question is exploration and production. Some are the same. Some are only exploration. They tend to be smaller.
Chairman, thank you. And just one follow-up, we had a conversation on the House floor that led Alaskans to believe that everything was fine because we had explorers coming in and that we didn't need to address the severance tax because obviously we were incentivizing those explorers and they knew what that tax base was or that tax burden would be when that hit their bottom line. So I just wanted to put the point on that as we bring people to Alaska to explore for oil, there's two parts or multiple parts to the equation. So thank you for that follow-up.
I certainly agree with that. Explorers are great, but what we all care about, of course, is production. If you need to have a transition between explorers and those that will actually produce, there's often a delay. Finding the appropriate partner, going through the transactional process, and as we know here, we have a lot of places in the state that have three-month expiration seasons. We see that frustration going on often. If you blow through a three-month season, you're waiting 9 months to pick that back up and go again.
And there's probably a reason why Kurt Schilling fetches a big price versus about 10 or 12 rookie prospects. But, Representative Edgman. I'm sorry, Dave Spahn.
He'll be fishing here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good to see you again, Aaron. It's been a few years. But I've got a question for you, and let me first try to frame it very quickly if I could. I think I've been pretty open with my comments that I share the premise that, that you and others bring up in terms of having to look at this issue and make some adjustments down the way that the House Bill 110 purports to do. But I represent a district of about 30-some-odd people, 30-some-odd villages. And unfortunately, some of my communities are down to 30-some-odd people. But I know Doyon also represents, you've got a lot of smaller communities, your district, your boundaries as well. And my question is, given that we both, we share the premise that that we have to do something here because it's pretty obvious that production and exploration are declining and precipitously so, especially when you look at the curve out in the future. But as a rural legislator, as much as I look at the opportunity for the longer term, I also look at the cost for the short term. And I'm a chairman of a village corporation. I know the business side of things, and I understand that element as well. But as a policymaker, I need to be concerned about what the short-term impact could be if we do, in fact, have a $2 billion shortfall to the budget. Could be on the very people that both you represent, the corporation, I represent as a legislator. And so I look at the opportunity, but I also sort of warily look at the cost that might be coming along. And my gap here a moment ago about 30 people, well, redistricting is taking place. We are going to lose maybe up to three rural legislators going down the road. So in terms of the of that whole sort of scenario, what advice would you have to give to me, knowing that I'm trying to find some kind of balance here that works for sort of both sides?
Very good question. One of the things I haven't heard talked about yet is the secondary impact of oil tax policy on contractors specifically. And one of the things we've seen at Doyon has, and let me start by saying that obviously we've heard about a slowdown in investment and activity as commodity prices have certainly regained their $100 barrel oil, for instance. And what we've failed to see is the commensurate increase in contracting opportunities, but also in the rates that we can secure as contractors. And that directly impacts what we can pay to our employees. We have not seen wage increases across our companies in some time. In fact, we're struggling, as Siri testified, to maintaining our workforce where we can, and we're downsizing in certain areas. You would expect, with very high commodity prices, that there would be both more activity and more opportunity to adjust wages in our workforce. And we're talking about 1,500 employees. You multiply that out, and many of our folks actually live in rural areas as well, so that the impact is direct in the short term on our constituents, our shareholders, and our employees, where we're not able to command higher contract rates because there's just not the margin left. And I'm speculating on a little bit on that, but I can certainly talk to our ability to negotiate better contracts with the producers.
Representative Dugan. Mr. Chairman, just hope a couple of quick questions here. The 250,000 acres in the Yukon Flats, is your work there primarily aimed at oil or gas?
That's oil exploration.
That's an oil exploration. Okay, thank you. Secondly, people keep using the term contractors, and, you know, back when I was a kid, and contractors were guys I worked for to, you know, help build roads and stuff. So could you define a little bit better what you mean there so I know what people are talking about when they say
that? Sure. Yeah, I grew up using the same term for contractors. Service providers is probably a better. We are contracted to major oil producers in general. Those are our largest contracts to provide various services, whether it's drilling services, security, engineering, food service, a whole panoply of activities, including construction. But when I use the term contractor, I mean that we are contracted to provide services.
Thank you. Just one more point, Mr. Chairman. This is something for the committee. I believe that, if I'm remembering this correctly, and frankly I often don't, that the people that we talk about as big oil quit exploring before ACES was implemented. So it may not be, there may not be a direct correlation between the changes and the structure that are attributed to ACES and what actually happened out there in the oil field. So I'd be interested in finding out more about that as we go along.
We'll continue discussion on that.
Thank you.
Any other questions? In short questions, please.
You've mentioned in your testimony that there's a portion of the governor's bill that you would like to see implemented immediately, become effective immediately, and could you let us know what portion of it, of the bill that is?
Specifically, the changing the progressivity portion to the bracketed tax provision, and going back to my comments about how companies plan and it takes years to implement, we believe that earlier implementation of that section will result in earlier, more activity happening sooner.
Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Scott, you're one of the largest contract service providers in the state. Can you talk about jobs, any amount of jobs, the security of jobs that you've had for your people in maybe the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years in the cycle that you've seen with changes in several different tax structures here and how that affects your employment opportunities and what you would see in the future if there was changes in the current tax structure?
Thank you. We have certainly seen, going back 5 years when commodity prices were high, we saw a lot of activity. In fact, our difficulty at that time, and that was when I was brand new as Doyon, was finding employees. We had to search, especially for highly qualified, highly technically qualified employees. We had to search outside of Alaska because oil field was booming all over the U.S. and North America, and so we would have to search pretty hard. As we went through the worldwide recession and lower commodity prices, we, as many here, struggled to keep contracts, and we had a number of rigs go down, which we had not had from 2000 to 2005. We had periods where rigs were stacked for 9 months to a year, which we hadn't had in a long time. As commodity prices came back, we've been fortunate at Doyon. We've maintained a lot of our contracts, but our industry competitors in certain areas have not been so fortunate, and that's not good for us either. When you see your competitor really struggling, especially if they're only one or two competitors, you lose employees. They go out of state. They go to North Dakota. They go to the Gulf states. And those are the folks we recruit from each other. We all know that. And you see these very technically qualified, trained people migrate off. Well, they probably won't come back. And those are resources for us. And you also just want to see a healthy industry. It's not great for anyone when the industry is struggling. Industry that you participate in. And so those are our concerns. We've been fortunate. We have had situations where we've had to lay off on our own people, but not as much as others.
Industry-wide, then, it's safe to say that it's your assumption that right now jobs, opportunities in the oil and gas production business are strained and that we would need changes in the current tax structure to bring those jobs back to Alaska?
I believe that, and Doyon believes, that we have fewer opportunities now because of tax structure and investment decisions that are partly driven by tax structure from the major producers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Thomas. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. In regards to what you were just talking about, the jobs leaving Alaska, what happens if we lower the tax rate and the cash follows the people? My concern is how do we keep the money in Alaska and people working? It's like your corporation, you don't have to answer. You might send me a note or write an email to me, but that's my concern. We'll give you a big tax break on your oil and royalties. That money leaves and goes to North Dakota, to Mississippi, and we don't get anything out of it. So how do we stop from that happening? And just you might think about that. Unless you already have, but maybe just email me.
Unless you'd like to respond now, Mr. Chair.
Unless you have the answer.
You know, it's a question of getting companies to invest in the state. Clearly, that's the trade-off for reducing taxes. For us as a company, we certainly benefit from higher activity here in the state, and that's our principal concern, is seeing a higher level of activity. Certainly the purview of the legislature to figure out what the appropriate balance is for incentivizing investment versus taking more in taxes. We believe that it's the appropriate time to make that change, but that's certainly something that you have to figure out.
Thank you, Thomas. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it would still be my concern because in the last week or so that we've listened to, it's cheaper to operate outside of Alaska. So, you know, if it's easier and cheaper for me to make money and double my money elsewhere, I can't see how it's going to reach my advantage to invest in Alaska if I can go to North Dakota, to the Gulf of Alaska, Mississippi, or down there to invest. So that's just a concern. I just hate to give, you know, I have no problem giving the tax that we leave, but I'm afraid to see all the money leave Alaska and we don't get any of the jobs that we've done. So we actually do it for naught.
Let me give you a couple examples, going back to the point that the easiest oil to be produced probably and the biggest return is investment in our current field. There's been almost no investment in Cook Inlet in many years. Very little activity. We have wells that could be worked over that would produce more. We're in that line of work that would obviously result in more revenue to the state of Alaska. Similarly, in Prudhoe Bay, as my brother said, there's more in known fields that through tertiary recovery and other efforts could be produced, and that goes to investment decisions based on tax policy. Those are the things that we should be talking about just as much as exploration, in my opinion, because those are things that are known. North Dakota and other places where they're developing new infrastructure, those are expensive efforts that are subject to higher risk than producing more from known fields.
Thank you, Ms. Shedd. It was really a pleasure to have the two boys from Tok here. That community must be pretty proud. And I gotta tell you, there's nothing Bush League about these two guys, kind of like Joe and Dom DiMaggio competing teams but making a stronger league. And I'm sorry, I love baseball so much.
Mr. Chairman, I got to ask, which is the elder of the two?
It might be in a matter of minutes or seconds. Next we have Ms. Sweeney from Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. And we'll take about a five-minute break after this presentation for anybody that's I do know there were 15th and 16th Amendments passed here. I think I got this right.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your Curt Schilling reference as a Red Sox fan myself.
And he is retired, I realize that.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Tara Sweeney, Senior Vice President for External Affairs for Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. I'd like to begin with a brief description of ASRC. We were established pursuant to the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971. Our corporate headquarters are located in Barrow with administrative and subsidiary offices here in Anchorage and across the U.S. We're owned by 11,000 Inupiaq Eskimo shareholders, many of whom live within the villages of Point Hope, Point Lay, Wainwright, Atkasuk, Barrow, Kapdolik, Nuuksit, and Anuktuwuk Pass. From very humble beginnings, ASRC has grown to become the largest locally owned and operated business in Alaska. ASRC has five diverse lines of business, including construction, resource development, government services, energy support services, and we also have a BIDCO and petroleum marketing and refining. ASRC Energy Services, which is the largest Alaska-based oil and gas services company with over 3,000 employees working across Alaska, and we also have the only Alaskan-owned refining and fuel marketing operation in the state. Our family of companies has approximately 4,000 employees working across Alaska in Barrow, Fairbanks, Anchorage, Kenai, Kodiak, Dutch Harbor, Valdez, and across the North Slope oil fields. We have approximately another 6,000 working in the lower 48. Given the size of our operations, it will be no surprise that the ASRC family of companies work with Alaskan businesses of all sizes across all economic sectors, health services companies, car dealerships, transportation companies, engineering firms, educational institutions, textile companies, IT consultants, and the list goes on. Taken together, our thousands of shareholders, employees, and business partners represent a broad swath of Alaska with diverse political views, cultural experiences, and personal beliefs. Nonetheless, I can say with confidence that we almost all agree on one thing. We want to protect and grow Alaskan jobs. From the North Slope villages to construction sites in Kenai to offices in Anchorage, we recognize that protecting and growing Alaskan jobs is the key to a successful future. And this is why I'm here today, to urge you to reform ASIS. The oil and gas industry is the bedrock of the Alaskan economy. The numbers are clear. The industry creates thousands of jobs, accounts for approximately one-third of the state's economy, and generates nearly 90% of the state's general fund revenue. This is nothing to say about the industry's spillover effect onto other economic sectors, the local restaurants, shops, and businesses whose customer populations include large number of families who rely on industry jobs. But Alaska's oil and gas industry is at a turning point. Since peaking at more than 2 million barrels of oil a day in the late 80s, only approximately 600,000 barrels of oil pass down the Trans-Alaska pipeline today. At this rate, the lower throughput could force the shutdown of the pipeline within a decade. If this occurs, thousands of jobs will be lost, and the economic damage could be irreversible. We cannot stand by and let the trend of declining production continue. We need a competitive tax structure that attracts new investment and new production on the North Slope. Under ACES, Alaska imposes a tax rate that are double and triple the tax rates offered by states like Wyoming, Texas, and North Dakota. We cannot expect to win new investments and grow Alaskan jobs under these conditions. This is why, again, we must reform ACES. Some have questioned whether reforming ACES will really result in increased investment. I would not be here today if I did not believe that ACES reform will result in increased investment and increased job opportunities. ASRC has nothing to gain otherwise. The experience of our subsidiary, ASRC Energy Services, is instructive. They've had many conversations with national and international companies, both big and small, who have resources to invest and who are excited about potential opportunities in Alaska. But until ACES is more competitive, these potential clients are waiting on the sidelines. And if ACES is not reformed soon, these clients will invest their dollars elsewhere. In the meantime, ASRC Energy Services is losing out every day on new work, new engineering work, new construction work, new operations, and new maintenance work. The lost opportunities are devastating. This is why ASRC Energy Services has launched a public campaign in support of ACES reform. For ASRC Energy Services, ACES reform is not about saving money for producers. It is about protecting the jobs of current employees, growing jobs for the next generation, and creating a sustainable future for the company. In closing, I would like to acknowledge the complexity of this issue. I hope we can all agree Alaska's future success depends on our ability to attract new investment to the state, particularly in a time when the national economy is weak and global competition is fierce. And I hope we can agree that reforming ACES is critical to this. I'm here to advocate for jobs and stability. I want to thank you for your public service and to remind you that thousands of Alaskans are watching the legislature this session. And from our employee base, we know and we've heard the message from our employees that reforming ACES is critical. Thank you.
Representative Hawker, thank you very much for your testimony, and love the Red Sox, too.
And sincerely thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, Tar, as you well know, I'm particularly proud and pleased to see you in front of us. We've known each other a very long time. Last week, we had the management of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System addressing the legislature. I don't know if you can answer this question, but if you can, I'd sure appreciate getting it on the record. Mm-hmm. One of the things we talked about with Admiral Barrick was a true risk to health, life, and safety, particularly in interior Alaska, if TAPS was to shut down and the refineries, one of which complex, Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, is owned since 1981, the threat to the communities that depends we have on those refineries. Are you in a position here to be able to give us some sense of the market that the PetroStar refineries have in the interior? Who is dependent upon you and the product you provide to Alaska?
Well, PetroStar, thank you for the question to the chair, Representative Hawker. PetroStar has a significant presence in rural Alaska. The refinery is located in North Pole, and we also have a presence in the Bristol Bay region, as we do in the Koniag region. And I'm happy to get you specific numbers, but I can tell you the presence of the refinery in the interior is significant, and we do have a large client base that is dependent upon the products that are sold and distributed by PetroStar.
Walker, if I might, Mr. Chair, again, Tara, you volunteered, maybe yourself, whoever's taking notes here for you. It would be very helpful to me to have sort of a market report for you guys. The key point is the dependence upon, it's not just, you know, the people that work for the oil industry, it's not just the people in my district that are employed in the oil industry, but it truly is a statewide dependence upon TAPS. That'd be very helpful if you could provide that. And I do have one other question, if I might.
Please proceed, I'm sorry.
Going the other direction, I'm quoting you the best I can, and you talked about the lost opportunities for your operating subsidiaries. You said lost opportunities are just devastating right now. I think devastating was your word. Kind of in the reflecting upon the comments in the council of Representative Thomas, you know, whose note was, why should we give these producers a break? Kind of the sense that that money is just going to fly out of the state and go elsewhere. It's not really going to be invested here. Your testimony would lead me to conclude that you sincerely believe that Arctic Slope Regional Corporation's corporate life here in Alaska would be improved with the change of this tax policy. So, you know, the question is being raised, well, won't they just take the money and run? And yet you and certainly the other testifiers today are saying that you believe that you as a critical element of Alaska's economic backbone would benefit and jobs in the community would be strengthened, the economy would be strengthened with a change in the tax policy. Do you have a thought and a response to Representative Thomas about why you believe this tax change would, in fact, bring a stronger, more robust economy to you and your shareholders?
Through the chair, again, thank you for the question, Representative Hawker. I can tell you, as Ms. Brown eloquently put it earlier, there are competitors in the room. but what I can tell you is that through our family of companies, we have had conversations with potential investors, and without ACES reform, this certainly will impact our ability to do even more business in Alaska. And just to clarify, ASRC and our family of companies employ Alaskans. We employ shareholders. We employ other Alaska Natives from other communities, and the impacts felt in rural Alaska are very real in that jobs are a very good economic indicator. They provide stability for our people. They enable our shareholders to purchase a gallon of milk at $10 in the bush. And these are very real impacts that we certainly hear and feel as a company and as an employer.
Last follow-up, sir. And a lesson to take away from that, and I do recognize you have competitors in the room.
Uh-huh.
But my takeaway is, and perhaps I'm asking, talking with you because I'm most familiar with Arctic Slope over the other regional corporations, but I very clearly just heard you say that you have to be careful to protect your corporate strategic intelligence and your business plans. We very much understand that and would never ask you to violate that. But my takeaway is, again, you're very clearly indicating that you do believe there are investment dollars ready to come to the state of Alaska. I believe you have corporate experience that might lead you to that belief were we to make the requested adjustments in this tax policy.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Representative Thomas, counterpoint.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just for the record, I am a regional director on another regional corporation board. In no way am I throwing any attacks at the regional corporations as aimed at the big money. Well, I'm concerned that the money may leave the state and not trickle down to the regionals. I'm trying to be very quiet in regards because I am, a regional board member, but I was not attacking the regionals or just concerned about the trickle down may not happen. So, I was just trying to address that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I feel sort of inadequate here. I've just got a question. With all reference to your inadequacy, we'll proceed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have no idea what that encompasses. Ms. Sweeney, it's good to see you again. Ken, you've used the phrase reforming ACES or ACES reform several times in your talk here. Can you give me an idea of what you mean when you say that? Do you know what we ought to be doing here? And if you do, can you tell us what that is?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Dugan, I can tell you that ASRC Energy Services, our family of companies, we understand that what we have now is not working. And we believe that the governor's bill is the step in the right direction, and we're for a climate that increases certainty and stability and jobs in Alaska. The specific breakdown of how that looks is, again, at the purview of the legislature, but from ASRC's perspective, we support legislation that would accomplish those three major points.
No, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. And thank you for being in North Pole. Just two quick questions. When we heard from those at Alyeska, they said that in the interior that we would only have approximately 2 weeks worth of surplus if they went down. Is that close to being correct?
I would have to get the actual numbers for you.
I would appreciate that. And secondly, we heard earlier on the dates for the bracket portion of this bill. Would you prefer to see that date moved up, or are you okay with the date currently in the bill?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, are you referring to the comments made by Aaron Schutt at Doyon? We're supportive of that.
Thank you so much.
You know, the two refineries in North Pole, you're the one that wasn't looking for the government bailout from the railroad, right?
That is correct.
Okay. Just trying to refresh my memory. Representative Guerra.
Thank you for coming. It's a difficult subject, right? You never know what portion of what change might cause a different behavior from the companies. But we're weighing two different things. One is credits, where we give you a credit if you do what we want you to do. So we could increase the credit for exploration wells because there aren't enough exploration wells to say, we'll give you a 50% credit. And the companies wouldn't get that money unless they actually built those exploration wells. And that's something that I'm more sympathetic to. But the last time we just played the reduce the tax rate game, it didn't work very well. Until 2006, we had a production tax rate that on most fields on the North Slope was 0%. 2 years prior to that, oil had jumped to $40 a barrel, which doesn't sound like much now, but back then was a huge jump. And so we had a world where oil had jumped to $40 a barrel from a historic $20 a barrel. 2 years later, still, there was less employment on the North Slope than there is today, less investment on the North Slope than there is today. The production decline on the North Slope was roughly 40% between 1998 and 2006. And it was not leading to a reverse in the production decline. So with a 0% tax rate on most fields on the North Slope back then, why do you think reducing the tax rate today is going to have a different result?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I can tell you from a service provider standpoint, what we have today is not working. And I'm happy to repeat the comments that I've made earlier, but as ASRC and our family of companies, we provide services to the industry. I can't speak directly to the decisions made by the industry. All I can tell you is we are losing out on jobs today under this current tax structure. And this regime, it's not working for us as a service provider. We employ thousands of Alaskans. We provide good services to the industry, and we're losing out because of the current structure today.
Representative Hawker. And Mr. Chairman, I think with your latitude and encouragement here, I'm a little concerned about a couple of these framing of questions that presume that, and I quote one, Big Oil quit exploring before ACES, and secondly, that nothing occurred during the ELF tax period. We've had previous testimony that has provided an extensive list of insignificant developments that occurred during that time period, and in fact, there are also significant number of investments that went bust because of, unsuccessful efforts. So I would just like to make sure that there are diversities of opinion on the record here on that particular subject. Thank you, sir.
Any other follow-ups from Ms. Sweeney? And you're standing between the breaks, so maybe that's why. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony, and thank you for making time today. And we'll take a real 5-minute break, and we'll stand at recess. Order is 10:47. Still on the 21st, continuing our presentations, we have now Northwest Arctic Native Association, one of their, why don't you guys identify yourself, right. What part of that company you are?
Yeah. My name is Eric Fox, I'm with NMS. Good morning. I'm Eric Fox, like I said, Vice President of Operations for Camp Services for NMS, NANA Development Corporation subsidiary. With me is Joe Mathis, President of NANA Pacific, another subsidiary of NANA Development Corporation.
And say out all the acronyms, at least the first time.
Yeah, NMS is NANA Management Services.
Okay.
And we have NANA Development Corporation, or NDC.
Thank you very much.
NANA Regional Corporation was owned by 12,500 Inupiaq people who originated in Northwest Alaska. I'm proud to call myself one of them. I started working for NANA as a security officer almost 20 years ago on the North Slope. My professional career has been with NANA, and I take great pride in being an owner shareholder of my employer. NANA supports House Bill 110. It will lead Alaska to be in a more competitive global position, thus allowing for a more competitive environment and increased oil and gas exploration and production. In simple terms, when there is oil and gas exploration, several of NANA's companies will be able to compete for increased work. When that happens, NANA can help the Alaska economy grow with private sector jobs, and move forward in our mission to provide opportunities and employment to our shareholders, the majority of whom live in Northwest Alaska. As you are all aware, unemployment is a problem in most of the 11 villages in our region, Northwest Alaska. As a shareholder and a manager of NANA, I work to provide opportunities to people from my home region. I take NANA's mission to improve the quality of life for our people by maximizing economic growth and protecting and enhancing our land seriously. The state of Alaska's taxes and the federal government's regulation oversight of Alaska's resource development industry are not good for business investment. Many of our companies serve the oil industry. Until the state changes its tax structure, the oil industry will not spend the kind of money as in the past to further develop Alaska's oil fields. The industry will look to other places in the world to spend its money. So our companies that serve the oil industry will continue to face tough times. If the companies we serve are discouraged from investing in Alaska, that means less work for our businesses and our people. NANA has a long history of serving the oil patch in Alaska. We started working on the North Slope not long after the passage of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. NANA Oil Field Services, Incorporated, or NOSI, has been in business providing services for the oil industry for about four decades, and NANA Management Services, or NMS, has been serving the industry for over 30 years. More recently, companies like NANA Worley Parsons have designed and engineered new North Slope facilities, and NANA Construction is building modules for use in Alaska's oil fields. Here's a quote from NANA Development President Helvi Sandvik on the state of the oil industry that she delivered at NANA's annual meeting in Amboy last week. Quote, the state of Alaska's taxes and the federal government's regulation oversight of Alaska's resource development industry are not good for business investment. Many of our companies serve the oil industry. Until the state changes its tax structure, the oil industry will not spend the kind of money it has in the past to further develop Alaska's oil fields. The industry will look to other places in the world to spend its money. So our companies will serve the oil that serve the oil industry will continue to face tough times. If the companies we serve are discouraged from investing in Alaska, that means less work for our businesses and our people, unquote. You see, I am honored that I was named NANA's Shareholder of the Year at our annual meeting in Amboy last week. It is humbling to see others' beliefs in me. I take the responsibility that comes with that honor seriously. It is part of why I felt the need to speak here today. I'm here to represent the interests of my company, my region, and my people. Alaska's clear and equitable share tax structure that was passed in 2007 is having a negative impact on all of them. NMS sees the direct impact from the growth, or lack of growth, of the oil and gas industry in Alaska. With about 2,400 employees, NMS is among the 10 largest employers in the state of Alaska. Over half of our revenues come from providing services to the oil and gas industry. Our services for the oil industry include food service, housekeeping, facilities management, maintenance, remodeling projects, wastewater management, logistics and security, as well as crime prevention and investigation. We also work in emergency medical response, leak detection, transportation, environmental and safety training, and temporary staffing. A major part of our mission is to provide employment and career advancement for NANA shareholders. I am an example of NMS's commitment in this area. Nearly a quarter of our workforce is Alaska Native, and 12 to 14% are NANA shareholders. We work with the oil industry to provide air transportation for NANA shareholders to travel from their villages to the North Slope for jobs. Any contraction of the oil industry reduces work opportunities and earnings for our entire workforce, but especially Alaska Natives living in rural Alaska. As the oil and gas industry contracts, so do opportunities for Alaska Natives to work close to home. As the economic viability of oil production declines in Alaska, the oil producers are forced to demand cost cuts from suppliers like NMS. As we struggle to meet the demands of our oil industry clients, we are faced with cutting our costs, including the benefits we can afford to provide our employees. A tangible example of the lack of investment from the oil and gas industry is a contract that NMS Camp Services has worked on for more than two decades, but recently lost. Was a $5 million contract that NMS had since 1989. Why did we lose the contract? The winning bid cut employee wages from the existing contract by 20%. I respect competitors who find ways to win contracts, especially with the increasingly lower margins offered by the industry. However, I just cannot go to my people and say, you're taking a 20% pay cut, and your health insurance premiums are going up as well. Last November, NMS President Mary Quinn and I spent several days on the North Slope, listening to the fears and distress of our employees who are faced with carrying a greater burden of health insurance costs as profit margins at NMS declined. Believe me, it was one of the most difficult experiences of my career to face proud, dedicated, and talented men and women in tears over how they will protect their family's home. The impacts are not just with NANA. Exploration jobs are down. The Alaska Department of Labor statistics show the oil industry has shed 1,700 jobs over the last 2 years. Chairman Stoltz, Chairman Thomas, thank you for your time. Now, with your permission, I'll yield to Joe to continue our testimony.
Mr. Mathis.
Co-chairs Stoltz and Co-chair Thomas and members of the Finance Committee, I appreciate being here today. As Eric stated, I'm Joe Mathis, president of NANA Pacific, another subsidiary company of NANA Development Corporation. I've been an employee of NANA for almost three decades, and I'm proud of the work that we do to provide employment and opportunities for our shareholders and helping the Alaska economy. Although the North Slope has still vast resources remaining, oil resources remaining, production continues to decline at a serious rate. In fact, the state of North Dakota may surpass Alaska production in just 3 to 4 years. Without new oil coming online, production will be down to about 250,000 barrels per day in the year 2020, causing serious operational challenges for the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. There is less exploration on the North Slope, and it makes my job, NANA's job, and all of NANA's subsidiary jobs harder. Less work on the North Slope in the oil patch is bad for NANA and our ability to help our region, our shareholders, and it is also bad for Alaska. We used to be the top oil producer in the nation. Now we're number two, and soon we will drop to number four. Meantime, investment dollars are bypassing Alaska for North Dakota, Alberta, Australia, and Russia. Only a single exploration well is being drilled on the North Slope this winter, while nearly 170 drill rigs are active in North Dakota. Just last week, I attended the largest conference of tribes and native peoples in the United States, RES 2011. I had the opportunity to meet the tribes based in North Dakota, Montana, and Oklahoma. They are excited about the prospects for enormous growth and opportunities in developing new oil fields in their state. I wish I could be as excited about our future as they are about theirs. We are not competitive compared to other oil regions. When oil prices are $100 a barrel, the total marginal government take in Alaska is 82%. In Alberta, it's 55%. In the Gulf of Mexico, it is 43%. Alaska is simply not competitive. Alaska's investment climate is driving away business. We must reverse that trend and get more into the pipeline. A new drill site would include the following work: goods and services, engineering, permitting work, building gravel pads and roads, materials for local vendors, a dozen modules, power supply from source to drill site, plus backup power, transportation to the North Slope, operators to run the facilities, and full-time maintenance people and other jobs. Close to home, just up the road at Big Lake, NANA Construction, a new subsidiary heavily invested in building modules for the resource industry. We invested $20 million in that facility. Making Alaska competitive would mean direct work for NANA Construction to build modules, an opportunity for several of our companies. These are real jobs for residents in the Valley, Eagle River, Anchorage. So there's, depending on the workload and the level, we have between 20 and 70 people up there, depending on what the requirements are for the industry. Another of NANA's subsidiaries is NANA Worley Parsons. an industrial engineering company that has been hurt by the downturn. The majority of its clients are the oil and gas producers. When oil and gas companies invest in a new project, NanoWorley-Parsons sees the direct benefit, as they are one of the companies that engineers and designs upgrade of new facilities. When a company like NanoWorley-Parsons works on a new project, we hire new people. This helps the entire economy grow, and it's not just the business's bottom line. ACES may have passed in 2007, but the impact of it is hitting us hard today. Projects take years to develop, and many of the projects that were underway in 2007 and into 2008 and 2009. The combination of the Great Recession and ACES has been devastating to the Alaska's oil and gas industry. NanoWorley-Parsons peaked in 2008 with 675 employees and $115 million in revenue. Today, it is operating about half that size. NanoWorley-Parsons has lost people to the robust Houston engineering market. We had one highly experienced designer leave us to move to Montana to work in the growing North Dakota market. We are now experiencing an industry brain drain as staff decide to leave Alaska for higher salaries and new challenges. Finding staff has become increasingly difficult. Highly educated and experienced people have a choice of where they work. Senior designers at NanoWorley-Parsons are asking to learn new software, which is used in offshore industry. They see future and recognize that most likely will not be here without some change in the action in exploration. Oil-producing regions in both North America and beyond have not only recovered from the downturn, but they are in fact growing. We have even heard the word booming in some areas. New projects are springing up in Texas, Alberta, and Australia, and throughout the Middle East. Alaska is no longer an attractive place to do business. Investment in new projects and production take years, and without action today and now, the way of life Alaska will change dramatically. Here are key points of why we believe that House Bill 110 will create jobs and increase production. It reduces one of the highest marginal tax rates in the world by creating brackets for the progressive portion of the production tax. The brackets would be similar to the income tax brackets, so as the price of a barrel of oil increases, only the incremental portion of the barrel of oil is taxed at the higher rate versus the entire barrel. It promotes infield drilling by increasing tax credits to 40% on the North Slope, and to equal the tax credits in other parts of the state. Three, it calculates the tax on a yearly basis of average prices and costs instead of monthly tax calculations, which are impacted by short-term price and cost peaks. Four, it allows companies to take tax credits in 1 year instead of spreading them over 2 years. Last, I came here in 1975 to help build the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. I do not really want to be here and see it being torn down. Chairman Thomas and Stoltz, thank you for this opportunity, and Eric and I would be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Well, first I want to say, Mr. Fox, my father of his 50 years of private sector work, all hard work, the last 15 years, may have worked with you and Purcell Security, Nana Purcell, and for me, it was gratifying he had that type of job, and my mom and dad, the traveling they got to do before, right after he retired, he had a stroke. And those years he had working in that quality of a job with a good paycheck, with that time off, those were really the golden years for my folks when they got to travel together. And that's a personal expression, but you know, a lot of this is, we're not talking about the details of the bill right now. We're really telling the story of the industry of Alaska and the economy, so. That was my brief deviation. Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this committee's gotten precious little information about the whole North Dakota spur of development. And let me ask you this. My understanding, what would worry me is if the main producers on the North Coast said, you know, things look so good in North Dakota, we're going to shut down shop here, we're going over to North Dakota.
Well, my understanding is that it's a totally different group of developers in North Dakota. That they do small fields, they frack, and it's a different technology and a different production. Maybe there is a little bit of overlap. My understanding is that there's no major overlap between the companies that are doing business here and the ones that are doing business in North Dakota. So this idea that Alaska companies are fleeing from here to North Dakota doesn't seem to hold water unless somebody shows me that that the core of the Alaska production business is leaving from here. So do you know of Alaska producers that are leaving Alaska and going to North Dakota?
No, I don't know exactly which producers, but I believe that there are ConocoPhillips has some interest in going there, but I'm not positive that. You would need to ask the producers that. I just know that in the service industry, that the service companies are leaving, and or not necessarily leaving, but they are sending operations down to North Dakota. I just got an email today from a tribe, the Mandan tribe, asking me if I would be interested in working with them on some oil field service work. And I just got that today. This morning when I came in from a meeting I had last week with the tribes down there. So they're trying to attract industry down there. The expertise that we have, Representative Vera, in Alaska is valuable, and I'd hate to see us lose that moving south. And it's only going to be driven by the amount of work that's available. And expertise will move to where it's required and needed.
Just one other follow-up. You know, we've heard this term marginal tax rate, and the higher the price of oil, the higher the marginal tax rate. And you talked about the marginal tax rate at $100 a barrel. And all that does is measure the tax rate between $99 a barrel and $100 a barrel. That's not the actual tax rate that the company pays, the overall tax rate the company pays. You recognize that the overall tax rate the company pays is much lower than the marginal tax rate, correct?
I'm not a net tax expert, but I would think that since we're up around $100 a barrel, it's getting close. So. I don't have the answer to your question.
Thank you.
That works, gentlemen. You have a brief introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, first I'd like to say thank you to Joe and their investments that they've done. At Nana, that's within a half a mile of my house where we're working in Big Lake there. And Joe, there's Alaskans that are concerned about how do we show that there's going to be more oil put in the pipeline if there's changes in the tax system? And if you could answer that, but just before you answer that, I'm going to think about that. I'd like to recognize two people in the audience. And I look around in the audience and see a lot of oil and gas industry folks, people who have a direct connection to this. But there's two people here who are just concerned Alaskans, and that's in the second row back on the right-hand side of Ray and D. Tingen. And so the emails that we get that say Ray D., that's Ray and D. And my constituents and Representative Stoltz's constituents come out in the Kinnick area, so welcome Ray and D., just as concerned citizens about what's going on in the state. I appreciate that. But
we don't have much constituents, but out in the valley or in Chugatgu River, district lines are arbitrary. They're all arbitrary.
That's right.
That clarification.
Joe, address how we can show there's going to be more oil if you think there's changes in tax structures.
Well, if you don't, there's certainly one. I mean, you know, they say insanity is keeping doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different outcome. And if you expect a different outcome in production and you keep doing the same thing, I don't think you're going to have a different outcome. You know, there are no guarantees on how companies will spend their money any more than there is a guarantee of how a person will spend their permanent fund dividend. And are they going to spend that money in the state of Alaska? Or if they were given an energy check, the offset high energy cost of $1,200, was there any guarantee that every man, woman, and child was going to spend that $1,200 on energy? And so I don't believe that those things are necessarily that you can equate that. You know, it's a very very difficult question to ask that you're going to have these kind of guarantees.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bearclough and then Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Every committee member, when they
have an opinion or a question is important to address. But what I find not very helpful is when we make accusations that have that aren't based really in fact, but just on a personal opinion, and then we leave that piece of information out there for the public to chew on and run away with as accurate. And so I just have to say, when we look at jobs, I've told this committee over and over again a personal story of a real company, Cruise Construction, and I've sent them to people's offices to talk about that. They are providers of services that we've talked about, that the secondary effects of what are happening with the current taxation structure. And that, I know that's subjective right there, that is the tax structure the cause and effect. But from this company's perspective, it is. It's relocating all of its assets or repositioning its assets in North Dakota, an Alaska-grown company, 200 people on the North Slope building all kinds of stuff for Alaskans, putting Alaskans to work, and they are not here in the same way. And I believe that number went from 200 jobs on the North Slope down to 3 or 4, or certainly 10 currently. And so when we make accusations that we just haven't seen anything happening on the North Slope, that's a perspective, and we it's a perspective. So please ask the question so that it can be answered in a way that actually has some fact basis. I think there was a great question, and that is, will the committee, Mr. Chairman, be provided some of the points of what's happening in North Dakota? Because it is a little bit different. In North Dakota, they're developing on private property, and so they're not having to go through the same government regulations or permitting processes that others have. But I think that's a valid question that was inside of that conversation. Mr. Fox, back to you. Can you talk about reframing the conversation that we're having with Alaskans and how, again, I'll go back to the previous question that I asked. Let's talk about the difference between an explorer and a producer and who's going to work under those different scenarios. Who are we putting to work under exploration scenarios and who are we putting to work for production scenarios? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for the question. You know, the exploration and production is a little bit outside the line of the services that we provide. What I can tell you is that in the services NMS is in, with the production phase of things, that's where we come into play and we start doing the work, whether it be security, camp services, facilities management, those types of things. The jobs that we provide often are jobs that we can give to our shareholders. Right now I have a flight, a charter flight, that goes into Kotzebue every other week. Last year, for the previous 3 years, that flight was running weekly. Okay, I had a weekly flight going to the North Slope because there were enough jobs to call for a weekly flight. It's no longer like that. Now it's every other week, and we no longer, and you're seeing the decline in those jobs, particularly in Dead Horse, which is, you know, right outside of Prudhoe Bay. So we're seeing the effect, and our people, our shareholders, are seeing that effect. You know, we pumped in millions of dollars of revenue into the Nana region, and that's going away. That's whittling away. And we all know that rural Alaska desperately needs that income. So as far as the production and exploration, I'm not real clear on who does that. I know that we would have a place in all that, and that would usually be a little bit later on in the business process, business cycle for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on a finer point, you're seeing job loss from service organizations.
That is correct, yes. The more technical end with the exploration generally doesn't fall into our own. It may with some of the other NANA companies, especially like the engineering companies,
brand NMS. Yeah. Yes, Nana Worley Parsons, you know, they saw a 50% decline from 678 employees down to under 300.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of you gentlemen said at one point that I'm not sure what it was. Was it the oil industry? Was it your company or something shed 1,700 jobs in the last 2 years? Do you recognize that statement? Can you help me out with what it was?
It was the industry.
1,700.
Sorry, if I might, Mr. Chairman, the industry in Alaska. We're going to have, Mr. Chairman, we're going to have to reconcile this somehow, because the information that I've got from the Department of Labor is that oil and gas employment went from 12,900 in 08 to 13,000 in 09, and a projection of 12,700 in 10. You know what? I don't know how to explain it, but those aren't the same numbers.
You know, it reminds me of a story. One of my best friends, Lee Jordan, he was the publisher of the Alaska Star. He would read stats about how crime was going down. When he had his reporter murdered in his parking lot, he didn't feel like crime was down. So I don't know what, I guess, his perspective. But I'm not, these guys can answer the question.
We can provide you with the source of our numbers.
Great. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
And then Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this is a hot topic, and a lot of us bristle when we hear the points made on the other side. And just to Representative Faircloth's point, there is evidence that completely substantiates one of her points, which is contractors are looking for work wherever they can get it. And there are contractors who are doing work up here and now in North Dakota, or maybe even moving to North Dakota. My point was whether or not the producers are leaving here and going down to North Dakota. And we have not heard any evidence of that. That would concern me if the major producers in Alaska were closing up shop and going to North Dakota. And that's something we just haven't heard any evidence on. But as far as contractors doing work in North Dakota and here or all over the place, I agree with Representative Faircloth. There has been testimony to that effect.
I didn't want to infer that the producers were closing up and leaving.
And this probably isn't your argument. This is around this table. So, Representative Fairclough.
Don't need anybody. And just a follow-up on that. Now, the major producers are competing in a global market now, and they're repositioning their global assets as producers. And we've heard that during the dialogues. And I was on the losing end of that battle, and so I will continue to pursue and persist in trying to say that Alaska is losing out with our larger investments based on the taxing structure, because we are competing in a global market and we are losing.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Gettenberg.
Thank you. Governor, thanks for coming and giving us your testimony and your perspective. Part of the problem that we have is trying to reconcile all the different things that we're seeing, whether it's, you know, the job loss for your company and the other companies, and the Department of Labor numbers that we're seeing, and there's something wrong. I saw a note that said there was a concern from some people that DH2 on the Hill was consolidating a lot of work on the North Slope. Instead of farming a lot of things out, a lot of things are consolidating. Have you seen that happen, that you're not getting the work that somebody else is?
No, that was those were real projects canceled and job losses and layoffs. It was not due to competition. But I cannot speak for CH2 on the Hill.
I was just reminded by myself that we're recording this, so just please identify for the clarity of the record, going back and forth. That was Mr. Mather.
Well, it still concerns me, because there is a conflict between different perceptions that we have and some of the statistical things that the Department of Labor is doing. Thank you.
Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I heard about the selection of the shareholder of the year up, and I'm very congratulations, especially to you. I remember when you used to be shorter than me.
Long time ago.
It's been a while ago, huh?
Yeah. What I'm finding intriguing about the discussion today is actually not that anybody said it, but it's part of my takeaway. from today, and that's the importance of the Alaska Native corporations to the overall state economy. I hope we never lose sight of that.
And Representative Buell, that was not an unintentional part of this. This is we're talking about oil taxes, but this was also an opportunity because I don't think enough of Alaska understands the economic engines that these corporations are. That was not an unintentional part of this process, not to promote, but anytime you can use a forum for education, it's a good opportunity. Any other takeaways from Mr. Fox or Ms. Smith? Okay, thank you. We'll invite Kupik Corporation, and I'm going to do my best here. I'd like to invite Isaac Nukupiuk. And whoever else is with me. Tell me how close I got to pronunciation.
Not even in the same
book. He said it was correct, right?
Woody. Before they go to speak on the Senate Bill House Finance Committee 110. For the record, my name is Isaac Nukupiuk. I'm testifying as President of Kupik Corporation, which is another Alaska Native Prince of Iraq, for the village of Nuiqsut. Nuiqsut is located in the Colville River Delta. We are actually 8 miles from the processing facility of the Alpine oil field and one of the Alpine satellite oil fields, Nanook, which is only 4 miles from our village. As you all know, Alpine is in the western edge of the existing oil and gas development in the North Slope. It is located just outside the National Petroleum Reserve of Alaska. Nuiqsut itself is within the NPRA. Alpine was discovered in 1992 by Arco Alaska Professor. By ConocoPhillips Professor, Arco, Alaska. Alpine was the first oil discovered on ANSA land under the Act. And many of the facilities were expected to be located on the surface estate owned by the Village Corporation of Nuiqsut, Kupik. On behalf of Kupik shareholders, and the residents of Nuiqsut, Kupik had negotiated for environmental and other protections for additional subsistence land. Kupik was able to successfully reach an agreement to help ensure that Alpine and future Alpine satellite oil field would be developed in a balanced and environmental responsible way. Kupik had always been in favor of a balanced and environmental responsible development on the North Slope related to oil and gas resources for several reasons. Many of our shareholders and the families work in the oil industry. Joe, that's next by side of me, will be testifying separately for Kupik, both generally and impartial focus on the impact of the ACE on jobs and for the people of Nuiqsut. Joe has been the president in the past for many years, the chairman of our board of directors for over a decade. Kupik itself is in the business of providing services for oil and gas industries on the North Slope, in the inlet, and elsewhere in Alaska. Kupik has two wholly owned subsidiaries, that provide oil field services. One is drilling, and the other is none of our subsidiaries that provides civil construction businesses and building ice roads, paths, roads, and lay down pipelines. Coupic has also a business partnership in the oil field services that provide services such as geophysical services, transportation logistics, catering, surveying, and engineering as oil field securities also. Through these business ventures, Coupic see that oil and gas industry in action on a daily basis and develop a sense of first hand on the wealth of the industry and the changing level of activities. The oil industry needs to move on west to the NPRA. If significant new discoveries are to be made and developed onshore on the North Slope. One of the biggest problem blocking development in NPRA is the failure of the Corps of Engineers to issue the bridge permit and the liquid channel of the Colville River for CD5 project, which is also called the Alpine West. The Environmental Protection Agencies also opposed the CD5 bridge. Without the bridge, CD5 and other potential satellites, oil fields that ConocoPhillips had proposed are unlikely to be built at any time in the foreseeable future. This will delay and prevent other fields in NPRA to be developed. These permits for the bridge project, those permits for the bridge across the Nicollet Channel will do no good. However, if oil and gas companies lose interest in investing in Alaska because of oil taxes, the current ACE tax regime is a major obstacle to develop an oil field in NPRA. Even if the Corps of Engineers issues all the unnecessary permits for the Nicollet Bridge and the three potential satellites oil field, all across the North Slope, Coupic oil field services companies are seeing reduced level of activities this year and go beyond. Just the impact of what is being done called the Great Wisconsin. The concept of ACE of sharing the upside of higher oil price makes good sense, along with substantially lower the state severance tax if the price drops to $40 per barrel, as they did in 2008. This risk sharing concept of positive for oil and gas in the state of Alaska. The ACES tax regime, however, simply takes too big a share of the profit in the higher oil prices. ACE should take too much of the upside. Development of oil and gas field must be environmentally balanced and responsible. Similarly, the state of Alaska must balance its desire for revenue for development in these non-renewable oil resources with a business need for oil companies that power so much of our state economy. This is balance. This is probably balance that would be a win-win situation for the state and the oil industry. A's does not reflect the proper balance. If A's is not reformed to be more fairly balanced, state revenues needs for the needs of oil companies, both the state and the oil companies, will eventually lose. The oil industry can go at least where for better opportunities. We all know that we're there. Alaska is in a very difficult competitive market when it comes to oil and gas in the global market. The people who live here, however, and our children cannot move forward without risking our very culture and lifestyle. For this reason, Cookpick supports House Bill 110 as a promising step to the right direction. Reforming of AIDS is a necessary first step of promoting increased level of exploration and development of oil and gas in NPRA, or at least where Ronald, state of Alaska. Thank you very much. I'd like to turn that floor over to
the other Mr. Kupia. I'm getting comfortable enough. I wanted to say it again.
Your doc bill will make it more simple.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and the House Committee, Finance Committee. My name is Joe Nukapio. I'm Matt Mayimapur. I am testifying as a former president and a former chairman on the board of Cookpick Corporation. I was the president of Cookpick Corporation when Alpine Oilfield was discovered, and continuing that position through the design, permitting and most of the construction of the Alpine facility. The Alpine facility was partly built on land owned by Cookpick Corporation, the Willis Corporation. Then I was the chairman of the board of Cookpick Corporation for much of the past decade, touring completion of Alpine and discovery and the development of the first two satellites of the Alpine oil field. Those two satellites are Nanook and Fjord. And I have been involved in resource development, particularly in the oil and gas industry for more than 20 years. I am also the president of Nanook Bank, wholly owned civil construction subsidiary of Cookpick Corporation. Almost all of our residents of Nunavut are Cookpick shareholders. Our spouses of shareholders or our children of shareholders who will someday inherit their parents' shares of Cookpick stock. Our shareholders and their families pursue a subsistence lifestyle. But Cookpick has always been in favor of balanced and environmentally responsible development of the North Flow oil and gas resources. Our subsistence way of life is the foundation of our Inuit culture. Many of our shareholders work or have worked at different times for the oil companies or for oil field services companies. Those jobs provide the money to buy fuel and ammunition for us to pursue our subsistence lifestyle. Even more importantly, they pay for the boats and equipment that help us to go whaling and the snow machine that makes it easier for us to travel during the winter months. The profits from Nanook Cookpick Drilling, LLC, and Cookpick's other oil field service businesses help Cookpick pay dividends to our shields and their family to help to support their subsistence lifestyle, and culture. For these reasons, a healthy oil industry in Alaska's house has been important for Kuukthi and the village. Most of the oil and gas development in the North Slope over the past 10 years has been in NPO rate. ConocoPhillips has at least three satellite oil fields which it wants to build in NPO rate. Those three satellites are Alpine West, Lookout, and Rontavis. Permit for Alpine West, also called CG5, have been delayed development of those satellites on oil field and NPO rate. Once those satellites are built, it will be more economical to develop oil fields further to the west. Though through the use of existing pipelines, road, and potentially some other facilities. As we have traveled our traditional hunting land in BRA over the last 20 years and plus, we have seen cast flares from a number of exploration wells beside of those three satellites or field proposed to be built by ConocoPhillips. We believe that discovery has been made by several other oil companies, but no project has been built in NPRA. There has been no exploration in NPRA for the last two winter exploration seasons. Part of that is that there is no point in exploring NPRA if the oil industry is not allowed by the federal agencies to actually build any facilities in NPRA. Permits for CD5 are critical, but so is their reasonable and fair surveillance tax. Kuukthi and our families are seeing less oil field activities and fewer jobs across the North Slope. We believe that the causes are not just economic downturn and a denial of the permit for CD5. ACE in its present form is part of the problem. Oil is not a renewable resource, so the state needs to get a fair share for oil produced within the state. But the coronation is tax takes too great of a share. I believe that the current ACES tax is too high at higher oil prices. If we want to see onshore development in NPRA, we need to reduce the share of the profit that ACES takes away from the oil industry at higher oil prices. The oil companies have too much of a risk for new development and are not enough to be rewarded when the prices are too high. We need to take a strike balance that works for the oil company, for the state of Alaska, and for my viewers as well. Thank you. If you have any questions, we might be able to answer if we can.
Questions? What's up, Gara?
Mr. Chair, I want to apologize to everybody. Every once in a while, I have to get up and take a walk because I injured my back and I can't sit that long. So. I wasn't trying to avoid you. First, on your point on NPRA, I think most of the people around this table, if not all of them, agree with you. I and others have written letters to the Army Corps of Engineers to try and get them to reverse their decision to allow the bridge to go across the Colville River. So we agree. Let me ask you this. You know, there's been some portrayal that there are some people in the legislature who don't want to see expanded oil development, and that's, in my view, not true. We just have different approaches. If we were able to show that a better, stronger credit system would work, and let me give you an example. We've heard that there's been a decline in exploration wells. And so there's been some discussion of increasing the credit, the payment the state gives to a company for building an exploration well. Increase that credit to maybe 40% or 50%. if we took that approach and were able to convince you that that would lead to more development, one, would that comfort you? And then let me just lead you my skepticism on reducing the profits tax. Conoco and British Petroleum are very good in that they reveal their Alaska profits. And they make fair profits. They're entitled to them. Under ACES, they've totaled over $15 billion in profits that they've made in Alaska over the last 4 years. My fear with just reducing the tax rate is, with profits, the company can just take the money and take it out of state. With exploration credits, they only get the money if they do what we want them to do in the state. We say, you get money if you build an exploration well. They only get state money if they build the exploration well. We say, you only get money if you build a processing facility. Then they have to hire people here to get the processing facility. So would you be open, if we're able to show that that would lead to more exploration, to a system that is more heavily on credits and less heavily on reduction in the profits tax?
Well, I can't speak for the producers, but I do believe there is some concept that can be worked on in, finding a solution to come to some sort of compromise with the industry and the state. Whatever concept that there is, that I do believe that, based on what the finding, that I do believe that Cooper would be impossible of going with that option. So there's some options that there's out there that people would have to explore.
Thank you.
Representative Jewell, any this your region? You the last word on that?
No, but thank you for both of you for being here. I was just, this is the only village corporation that we've heard from today. And I know that, when it came to discussions about crossing the Colville River, at one point in time, people were not together. And it seemed like the federal government at that time was almost ready to say, okay, now that we have all of the local entities together and united on the Colville River Bridge, now it's that same federal government that's saying, we're going to slow this project down, and hopefully we can get that addressed so we can see some NPRA and NPRA West come online. But welcome. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you there, Representative Jewell. Yes, Cookpick was able to manage to keep the community, this whole last one, unified, looking at economic, protection, social. So Cookpick, with the leadership group of Nixon, we'll be able to pass a joint resolution of having Cookpick take the lead to negotiate oil and gas for the within the facilities of Nixon. So one vital tool that we use to try to move forward in the most environmental practical alternative solution to make sure that oil and gas continue. So we've been very fortunate to have gripped the community and move forward.
If I may, I might want to add some of these in my testimony. That at first, when Proto Cook Power, whatnot, was first discovered some many years ago, we, in our resident of North Slope, we were skeptical. But over time, we learned how the oil and gas industry works and how it's been developed. And so from that end, it has, with that skepticism, has gone away in support. And then again, now Elk Pine being in production mode and being developed in our, we are the first village corporation that has seen this, being Cook Peak and the village itself on partial of Elk Pine under ANSA. But Elk Pine has brought a lot of benefits to our village, not only to our village, but to the Alaska community as well. I just want to make that point. Thank you.
And for our clerical record of the new Kupiaks, let's find first Isaac and then Joe for our clerical help.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony. Next, a very brief addition to our agenda. We have Mr. Leonard. Are you still there? We'll be reading a statement from Jalista Corporation's President and CEO, Andrew Guy. I don't know if he was here for questions or just to enter it in the record. So we'll proceed with your introduction and see where it goes.
Thank you for your time. As mentioned, my name is Tom Leonard, Communications Manager for Chilis Corporation, Regional Corporation for the Chilis Region in the YK Delta area. We're reading a prepared statement from our President, Andrew Guy.
Does everybody have that? We'll make sure everybody's got it. It's very, very brief. Everybody does have it.
Thank you. Dear committee members, Chilis Corporation supports a more competitive environment for Alaska's oil and gas exploration and development. We support legislation encouraging the increase in oil production on the North Slope. Development of Alaska's resources should be considered a long-term investment of long-term projects. A more balanced long-term strategy could benefit Alaska and the nation in many ways, from the potential of a more consistent oil and gas supply to steady employment for hundreds of Alaskans. The current tax structure, ACES, can be improved. CNBC's report last summer placed Alaska as the worst state in which to conduct business in the nation. The survey determined Alaska was ranked last for the fourth year in a row. Additionally, higher well credits can help encourage new and existing field development. Alaska has a strong history of exploration, and the state laws and regulations need to better support continued exploration and business development in Alaska. The jobs oil and gas provides for our shareholders enables them to work rotational schedules and still live a subsistence lifestyle. Again, Chilisa supports utilizing our state's natural resources in a safe and responsible way, while providing a more balanced business environment for the oil and gas industry. Chilisa, thank you for your time in this important matter. Priyana.
And I'm presupposing you're not going to be able to make any statements for the industry, given that you're leaving a very limited statement for your company. So we'll just enter that in the record per the manner of your presentation. Thank you for finding the last minute and participating. With that, we will stand in recess until 1 o'clock, and we're going to do 1 o'clock sharp. We're getting out a few minutes early, so we're going to bang the gavel as sharp as 1 o'clock can get for me. So with that, we're in recess.